stimulation. So what you'll do is you'll stimulate through these electrodes that go into the thalamus in our case. And there's a little pacemaker box that's inserted just below the collarbone in the chest. And that really drives, you can do all your programming through there, and it will deliver electrical signals through those electrodes in the brain.
Fellow Homo sapiens, welcome back to Epilepsy Sparks Insights. My name is Tori, and I'm here to help bridge the gaps in communication between clinicians, scientists, researchers, and those of us affected by and or interested in the epilepsies. Do make sure that you like, comment, and subscribe to the channel to help spread awareness and understanding of the epilepsies around the world. Now, DBS, or deep brain stimulation, is a type of neuromodulation that can be a really cool tool to help improve the lives of some people with a refractory epilepsy. Well, this week, we hear from neurologist Linda Dalek from Austin Health and the University of Melbourne, Australia, who tells us about her randomized control trial using direct brain stimulation as a treatment for people with the rare genetic epilepsy, Lennox-Gastaut syndrome, or LGS. And the results really are quite promising. So on to our star of the week, Linda Dalek.
I'm a neurologist mainly, specializing in epilepsy, but I have also now embarked upon the journey of becoming a scientist. So I do a bit of research as well on the side. So mainly looking at what we call neuromodulation research, which is basically a way in which we can alter brain networks that are driving seizures to try and, you know, quell seizures. So that's been my passion and my drive for the last 5 to 6 years whilst I completed my PhD.
Oh, what was the title of your PhD?
So I looked at neuromodulation, mainly in the form of deep brain stimulation in patients that have quite a severe type of epilepsy called Lennox-Gastaut syndrome, which some of your listeners are probably familiar with. So it's predominantly a childhood onset epilepsy, but we studied young adults and we implanted a deep brain stimulator device in their brains in 20 young adults, and we perform what we call a randomized control trial. So we tested the device or the treatment with a half of the patients, and then the other half of the patients, they were blinded, so they didn't know whether they were on or off, and they were in the off group, and we compared whether the treatment was or wasn't successful, and we actually did show that there was a reduction in seizures, so we were very pleased with the result. But our research is still at the very early stages, and we're ongoing with longer term follow-up studies.
You mentioned, of course, clearly the results when it comes to seizures. Do you look at other aspects of affecting quality of life when it comes to treatment for epilepsy?
100%. And, you know, a lot of the times when people have this type of epilepsy, it is more than just the seizures. The parents in particular, they are quite concerned about patients' quality of life. So sleep, their ability to communicate, ability to mobilize, things like that. So in our cohort, majority of our patients were on the quite severe end of intellectual disability. Where possible, we did try and test cognition, and we did this using an iPad-based test called the NIH Toolbox. But, you know, as you can imagine, if people are nonverbal and have, you know, inability to use their hands, you know, it's hard to use the NIH Toolbox. So that was only capturing a small portion of our cohort that we tested, but we also looked at caregiver assessments, so their disability of their epilepsy in something called the GAD score, the overall severity of epilepsy in the GACE, and also we did an ABAS assessment, which is measuring your adaptive skills. So that's everything somebody needs in order to basically navigate their way through life. So can they walk across the road? Can they feed themselves? Can they give themselves medication? Things like that. So we looked at all of those things. And then in addition to looking at seizure diaries, which we know are notoriously fraught with, they're not the most accurate things, but nonetheless, every single drug and device that we have is based on seizure diaries. But we definitely use that. And that was what we looked at, what we call our primary outcome. But in addition to that, we also looked at the seizures that were captured on an EEG, a 24-hour EEG. And actually, that was the most striking result, that the group that were in the stimulated group, they had 89% of them had a 50% or more reduction in their seizures. So I think we really just captured the tip of the iceberg when we looked at the recorded seizures in the diaries. But when we looked at the actual electrographic seizures, there was a lot more going on that we picked up. So that was a really useful exercise to do, despite it being so laborious to count all those seizures.
Gosh, well, there were that many. And that's actually an interesting thing, because some people will have squillions a day and often they don't know they have them, right, as well.
Exactly. They're very subtle sometimes, you know, not just in Lennox-Gastaut, but in all different types of epilepsy. And I think that there's in general this misconception that, you know, people only have generalized tonic-clonic seizures. Well, you know, no, we know that there are multiple different types of seizures. And that's why having video EEG, especially in a cohort that are often, you know, they're not able to say I've had a seizure, or they're not able to be monitored 24/7, because, you know, that's life. So we found that very, very helpful.
So tell us, what we've been speaking about DBS, but what does it stand for, and how does it differ from, say, I don't know, RNS, or from a million other acronyms? Tell us.
Yeah, sure. So there's full of acronyms. So breaking it down, deep brain stimulation, or DBS, it's basically a surgically implanted device. So you do have to undergo neurosurgery to have it inserted. And what there are often two electrodes that are implanted deep in the brain. And where they are implanted very much depends on sort of the type of epilepsy that you have. So a lot of the work in epilepsy focuses on implanting the electrodes in the thalamus. So that's quite deep in the brain, got two, one on each side. And within the thalamus, there are different nuclei. So we implanted in a part called the CM, or the centromedian nucleus, but there was a really, you know, big study over 10 years ago called the Sante study, which looked at patients that had focal epilepsy that wasn't responding to drugs, and that implant, they implanted in the ANT, or the anterior thalamic nucleus. People also implant in the hippocampus, and there's been studies done in the cerebellar area. So you can really implant anywhere, and you really choose your target based on the network, I guess, that you're trying to target. And for us, our group in particular, before we did the study, we were doing a lot of network studies that really highlighted where the epileptic network of Lennox-Gastaut syndrome was, and we knew that the centromedian nucleus was involved in it. And that's why we chose it. But so that's deep brain stimulation. So what you'll do is you'll stimulate through these electrodes that go into the thalamus in our case. And there's a little pacemaker box that's inserted just below the collarbone in the chest. And that really drives, you can do all your programming through there, and it will deliver electrical signals through those electrodes in the brain. And you can change the parameters. So there's thousands of different parameters that you can choose. You can have it on all the time. You can have it on in a cycling fashion, so on for a certain amount, off for a certain amount. You can change the frequency. There's lots of different things. And I think we're still very much at the early stage of trying to figure out what the optimum settings are in epilepsy. This is a technology that's been around for decades in Parkinson's disease with much success. And I think we're really lagging behind where they're at. But that's, I guess, the exciting stage. And that's another area of our research. So that's deep brain stimulation. There's also RNS that you mentioned, or responsive neurostimulation. And it's a US-developed device. And they basically, you know, you can use it in the same cohort of patients. So this is a group of people that have epilepsy that the drugs don't work. So we call that drug-resistant epilepsy. What you do is you still insert these stimulating electrodes like we do in deep brain stimulation, but the actual RNS system will pick up on epileptic activity and then deliver the stimulation in response to that, hence the name responsive stimulation. So unlike deep brain stimulation, that is just constantly giving stimulation without sort of any you know, feedback from the brain. Responsive stimulation is constantly signaling, you know, picking up the signals in the brain, and then that will deliver the stimulation to the patient.
So just to provide a little bit of reassurance for people, patients, families and clinicians who aren't familiar with, you know, epilepsy surgeries and treatments in general, when you talk about putting electrodes into a brain, it's not like getting a bigger thick wire and stabbing it somewhere or other, is it? It's like a tiny, tiny, like borderline invisible, well-targeted in between the squishy bits to the right area type thing.
Correct. Yeah, it's all highly planned beforehand. So what we'll do is patients will typically have an MRI beforehand. And then what we'll do is we'll sit down at a special computer and we'll plan where we're going to put the electrodes. And often there's two tiny burr holes in the scalp. And so they're just little tiny holes that the surgeon will drill under anesthetic. And we'll, using a frame that makes it very accurate, we'll be able to guide those wires down so that they go exactly where we've planned. And then at the end of the surgery, those wires are connected underneath the skin. So they're tunneled through the collarbone chest area, and the whole system is then, you know, connected and ready to use. And the surgeon will just place a little cap on where the burr hole was so that the wires don't move. But, you know, things happen. So if, for example, there's an infection, which can happen, about 5% of people that undergo the surgery will develop infection, or if there's a small bleed or any other complication, or if patients just decide they don't want it anymore, it's a reversible procedure. So it's very easy then later on for the surgeon to remove that cap and to remove those wires if needed. But we hope that it never gets to that stage.
And it's not like a resection where you, you know, scoop out a clump of tissue. It's just sticking something in. So it's much more, I mean, it's a big deal, but it's not as major, if you like.
Correct. So typically there's no tissue removed. There's no damage done to the brain itself. The only thing that's sort of removed is a tiny bit of bone through the burr hole, which is very, very small. If you could see my fingers now, I'm just pointing very, very small. But that, I guess that's one of the advantages versus doing resective surgery. But we know that deep brain stimulation, it's not really something that we would offer to people if resective surgery was also on the cards, because we know that resective surgery by far gives patients a better chance of becoming seizure-free. We really consider deep brain stimulation and responsive neurostimulation as what we call palliative procedures. So although there are some people that are completely seizure free after they've had these procedures, it's definitely not the majority. And that's something that I really try to emphasize to my patients if I'm counseling them for undergoing this, that, you know, whilst it would be great if they could become seizure free, we're not always expecting it.
So it benefits quality of life in ways other than seizure decrease.
We definitely hope for there to be seizure decrease, and a lot of studies have shown decrease in seizures. It's just the seizure freedom that's the difficult part. And I think, you know, perhaps as we improve our parameters and our understanding of which targets for which type of epilepsy, then perhaps we might do better with obtaining seizure freedom. But at this stage, that, you know, it's not the majority of people. So I think that there's still a lot of work to be done, and we know that with any form of neurostimulation, a lot of the studies have shown progressive benefit over time. So I guess as we do it more, we'll have more long-term data to say, well, yes, you might not be seizure-free after the first year or two of having this procedure, but maybe
years later, right? Because it's almost like you'll tailor the technology to how to the patient, right? Is that correct?
Yes, yeah, we definitely try and do that. We definitely try and do that with the targeting, and then hopefully as we sort of know more about the stimulation parameters, to try and tailor that. And we've certainly been doing that with our cohort of patients that we studied with our deep brain stimulation trial. We have tried different parameters now that the trial is over. And, you know, other studies have also looked at deep brain stimulation using different parameters. So it's also hard when there's so many different studies going on, all using different not techniques, but different parameters. It's trying to get some uniformity. But just going back to the long-term studies, I mean, you know, the Sante study that I mentioned before, which was the focal epilepsy group, you know, they've now got data 10 years, and there are more people there that are seizure-free than when they first did the trial. So I think that there is some hope that we will perhaps get better results with neuromodulation as time goes on. That's certainly what drives my research.
A huge thanks to Linda for sharing with us her exciting research results into treating LGS epilepsy using DBS or deep brain stimulation. If you haven't already, don't forget to like, comment and subscribe, and see you next time.